I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. The live show is available every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. Simply search for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. And now, on with the show. On this episode, the Retro Rogues, Eric and Dave, are joined by two special guests, Ed Harris, an original comic book collecting art expert, and PJ from Orville Nation.
So, again, because we're using our slightly augmented new format, we're going to start off by talking about the latest episode of Star Trek Picard. This would be episode 6. We're going to start off with our general impressions of the episode before, you know, kind of getting into some spoilerific discussion. Unfortunately, we don't have a fancy Picard graphic. I ran out of time. Oh, we'll use that one. but we're going to start by talking about the latest episode of Star Trek Picard. So tell me, Eric, what were your initial impressions of this episode of Picard?
General impressions. Well, I will say that I felt more positive about this episode than the last episode. That's not exactly a high bar to set, unfortunately, because the last episode was, I think, very controversial and had some pretty low points in Trek, honestly. I do think that this episode was better, and I do think it actually holds up better than a lot of the other episodes in the series in general. I wouldn't necessarily put it up there exactly with episode 1, which I think we both agreed on is probably the best episode of the series so far. But it's kind of close. For the most part, I thought after the first act or so, I thought that it moved decently. There was some issues I had with the first act. That's kind of some of the unevenness of the show overall, I think, is that there are parts of this episode and this part of this series in general where you feel like things are being rushed. And then the next minute, you feel like things are going on way too long. Like, why are they taking so long to explain this very simple thing that's going on in the show? But why are they using, you know, quasi pseudo techno speak when it's not necessary? Why are they inventing new terms when it's not necessary? You know, that was a big a problem with episode 5, in my opinion, when they were trying to explain the heist, if you will, the con that they were doing. It was very straightforward, and they just took forever to explain it, and I was completely confused over a very straightforward plan. There was some of that in this episode as well. Like I said, I thought once you got over the first act or so, it seemed like it picked up a lot. There were parts that were going real fast and actually were holding my attention, and I was actually getting kind of excited about. So, and I can't say that about a lot of the rest of Picard, unfortunately. But I did have those moments in this one, particularly at the end. I thought that the ending was somewhat exciting and all that kind of stuff, that where I was kind of almost on the edge of my seat at the end of the episode. I still really dislike Raffi. I'm really going to get into it in our deep dive about my issue with her, specifically in this episode, that I think was a real low point. And I could have been handled completely differently. But Rios seems okay. You know, I think he got through the episode okay. The scientist girl, I think she's ruined. She was ruined by the previous episode, and she's literally like damaged goods now. So I was not impressed with her character. For the first time, I think, in this series, we had someone, you know, see Picard on screen, you know, for the first time, and they didn't treat him like he was a big jerk. We actually had a moment where someone was, you know, reintroduced to Picard and wasn't like, "You bastard, you did this and this," you know. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time that's happened. We're on episode 6. We're over halfway in the series. And for the very first time, somebody actually treats Picard the way that the fans would treat Picard, you know, and that was a good moment. That's probably one of the reasons I actually like this episode. And so it was a good moment. for, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that Hugh appears in this episode, and I think Hugh did a very good job. I think he's a high point. I think he is the only character so far, in my opinion, other than some moments with Picard himself, where I really felt that he was actually embodying the spirit of Trek,
right,
where the character was actually doing very Trek-like things. I think this is the first time I've seen that. So overall, I would say that my impression is pretty good, actually, of this episode. I do have some major issues in the first act, and I am going to get into them in the deep dive. But overall, you know, I enjoyed it. And I see that Orville Nation is in the chat, and wanted to say thank you, PJ, for stopping by. You're always welcome on the show, by the way, PJ. If you ever wanna come on the show, just let us know, because we'd love to hear from you. In fact, we have some news to give about you later when we start talking a little bit more about news from the channel itself. PJ, you're always welcome to join in, and I'm sure you have a lot of opinions about the latest episode of Star Trek Picard as well. But yeah, overall, I would say that it's kind of more of, you know, kind of a high point in the series, at least. I feel like the story is finally really moving. It's mm-hmm. taken us, like I said, we're over the halfway point of the first season. And finally, I feel like the story is really moving.
So I wanted to mention, too, I want to thank Orville Nation, PJ, for commenting, as always. Well, at least for the time being right now. I want to mention that I want to thank everyone who comes into and actually leaves a comment and kind of joins the discussion for the show. I like to encourage people to do that. So we had this. This is going to be the sketch card we give away during this episode. It's kind of unusual because it's Mighty Mouse. And there's the artist proof thing there on the back. It'll make more sense as we dive further into the episode. But I wanted to mention that real quickly, that we are still doing that with this episode. My impressions of Picard. I liked this episode. There was a lot about this episode I enjoyed quite a bit. No, yeah, I mean, it was fun. There was a lot of aspects of this that were fun. I enjoyed this episode. I'd have to say this is one of the better episodes for me. I wouldn't say this is the highlight of the series. I think episode one is still the highlight, but I quite enjoyed this episode. There was a couple things I didn't care for, but as we get into the deep dive, we can get further into that. But overall, I'd have to say this was an enjoyable episode of Picard for me personally, and that's my general impressions of this episode.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you there. I think especially with how it ended, I have some things I can nitpick, and I will. But overall, I do think it was an enjoyable episode, but I did have some issues with it, especially, as I said, in the first act. So you want to get into some spoilers here?
Yes, let's get into some spoilers.
Let me get my little spoiler alert here.
Pull up a Picard graphic if you want to share my screen. It's not as fancy as we like to make them, but we got a Picard graphic. And I think this graphic, I selected it because it kind of sums up how I feel about this is my favorite part of the episode. We'll just leave it at that for sure. Do you want to get into just kind of giving us a quick synopsis of the high points of what happens?
Yeah, absolutely. Because this image happens very early. You know, this is part of the teaser. So there's two parts to the teaser in this episode before we get to the credits. The first one is it appears to be a flashback of Soji as a child, and apparently she is dreaming, and the way that the dream goes is that she basically, it's like a stormy night, she's kind of like waking up, she's going down a hallway, and she goes into her father's lab, and basically her father seems to like chastise her or something along those lines, and then after her being chastised, she just wakes up. So it appears to be like some sort of flashback, a recurring dream that she has. And the next thing we get is it's basically Picard kind of establishing what they're going to do, what they need to do in order to get Soji, because they know now that Soji is on the artifact, on this Borg cube. So he's kind of saying, he's laying things out that we need to go, obviously, to the artifact, because we need to find Soji. You know, people are obviously concerned. And of course, Picard starts to get concerned. We have sort of like a kind of a PTSD kind of moment where Picard is kind of reflecting on his assimilation by the Borg. And that's kind of where we get this scene, is Picard is kind of doing research. He actually does like search terms on his computer, essentially, for Borg, the artifact, and Hugh, because Hugh is the director of the Borg reclamation program. What's interesting is what's established also in this scene, or as they're talking about things, is that the Borg reclamation program is sort of like a sub program within what the Romulans are doing, because technically the Romulans control the artifact. They're in possession of the cube. It's in their space. They're handling security. They're the ones that are basically harvesting the parts and selling them, presumably. But there is another independent program within this called the Borg Reclamation Program. And that's what Hugh was actually the director of. So I thought that was kind of interesting, too. So they kind of established that this is sort of like almost a Red Cross, you know what I mean? Like working within the Borg cube to rescue the Borg that they're harvesting the parts from, because the Romulans don't care about them. But Hugh is basically in charge of helping these people and sort of reintegrating them. So that's when we get this shot. There's a shot, obviously, where Picard is actually looking at an image of himself as Locutus from The Best of Both Worlds. And it was pretty cool because they actually interlaced the image on top of Picard's face, which I thought was really, really cool. I really like that. Obviously, it kind of gives you, as a hardcore Trekkie, myself, it kind of gives you goosebumps and everything like that, looking at that image. And then also Picard's reaction to that image, because it's very, very traumatic to him. I thought that was pretty cool. I thought that was done very well. You can see the kind of image right here where he kind of basically interlaced his face, and it did a really good job. It looked really, really good.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
The they got it like perfect where his face just interlaced right on that hollow screen. Yeah. And I definitely think that was a really cool moment. A really cool moment in the episode. So that's how the teaser starts. Once we get past the teaser, this is where we start to get into the territory that really was kind of the low point of the episode for me. I'm not pulling any punches anymore about how much I really dislike Raffi. I think that she's a terrible character. And what really kind of, I'll say it, it kind of infuriated me, because the actress went on the Ready Room with Will Wheaton and said one of the big things that she's trying to accomplish, one of the things that she's so excited about, is she wanted to present an image that people that struggle with addiction are not useless, that they have a place, and that there are many people that struggle with addiction, and she kind of wants to be like a champion of their cause. I'm paraphrasing what she said, but it was something that she said that was very important to her. And the way they treat her relapse in this episode is like a joke. And I predicted that, by the way. I don't know if you remember, but I predicted that we would get Raffi having a relapse. That was very obvious. You know what I mean? I predicted that on the last show. And the way that they treat her relapse is basically that she's like literally like drunk and high. And they decide that she needs to help them because they have to get credentials to get onto the artifact. In order to get on the Borg cube, they need diplomatic credentials. Now, how or why the hell Raffi would be good at this, I don't know. We were told that she's in Starfleet intelligence. That doesn't have anything to do with diplomatic papers or anything like that. In fact, the person she calls is a Starfleet officer. So it's like, this doesn't even make any sense. Shouldn't she be calling somebody like in the diplomatic corps? You know what I mean? Like an ambassador that she knows, which we could have had something like that. So even the continuity is terrible. It doesn't make sense within the world. So she's calling a friend in Starfleet, a friend who is, pretty much sick of her, just like everybody else is. And she goes through this whole little, very convoluted spiel. And she's drunk and high. She's literally smoking and drinking as she's doing this. And she goes through this really silly spiel to kind of con the Starfleet officer into giving her diplomatic credentials for Picard. Okay. And I just thought the scene was so silly, so unrealistic, and it totally took me out of the world. especially when Patrick Stewart, and I'm saying Patrick Stewart, not Picard, gets up and claps for her. Because that was just like, that was such a bunch of actors on set moment. I mean, it really just took me out of the world for a second. It was just like, okay, that was terrible. That whole scene was silly. It was convoluted. You're totally minimizing the fact that this woman has now relapsed into care. You know, nobody cared. It was just like a big joke to them. And then they're applauding her for her little scam that she did to get the Starfleet officer to give them the credentials. I thought it was terrible. I really thought it was terrible. And I think if you wanted to treat this subject with any kind of seriousness, what should have happened was she should have gone in there stumbling, drunk, high, practically incoherent, and she should have just screwed everything up. Because that's what happens when you relapse, you know? That's what they should have shown. That's what they could have shown. It could have been a very deep moment to show what that kind of process is like. But instead, they just made it a big joke. And she did fine. Even though she was drunk and high, she did fine. So that's the message of Trek. Hey, you can be high and you can be drunk. You can still do your job. No, it doesn't work like that, you know? So that really kind of infuriated me because I felt like they took me out of the moment. And I also felt like in terms of what the actress has said, what her sort of goal has been and what she's trying to kind of accomplish with the role, I was like, this isn't good for that. This is not a good message to be putting out for people that have either dealt with addiction directly or loved ones or anything like that. You're creating a very unrealistic expectation that you can still do your job and still come out smelling roses when you're drunk and high, you know? So I hated that. I absolutely hated that. And I thought they kind of just glossed over this entire process when they could have really made it something interesting for Raffi's character. You know, they could have even had something where you could have waited. You could have Raffi still just acting fine. She doesn't have to relapse right away. Because a lot of times when people relapse, it's not the big event that makes them relapse. It's like a culmination of events, you know? So it's kind of like something really silly and obscure sets you off, not the fact that this big thing happened with her son. There's just so much to me that they could have done in that scene that they didn't do. And it just really took me out of it. And I really hated it. I really hated it. I thought they made it into a joke. I really thought they made the whole process of addiction and relapse as a big joke. We do have a comment here from Clyde Neville. Who was saying, good evening, Dave. Looking forward to more excitement. Because Eric goes into the depth of the show, has he considered writing his own show? And Clyde, yes, actually, I am involved in film production on an independent small level. And in fact, I actually have a proof of concept trailer that should be finishing up pretty soon. But hopefully I'll be able to share on the show and all that kind of stuff. I'm even working on a project right now with Dave, that we're very preliminary at this point, but hopefully we'll be announcing some news about that as well. So, yes, Clyde, I am interested in film production. I am involved in film production, and actually, in terms of writing, I have been working with my director on a script. So, yeah, I definitely am into that sort of stuff and working on it. So we'll see how that goes, right? And then people can criticize me and go into all sorts of depth and say, hey, what about this? What about that? Well, that was a big plot inconsistency. Right. Katie's back in the chat. We're always happy to see you, Katie. She said, that scene disgusted me. Someone like Janeway, whom I admire, would have taken that bottle, poured it out, and thrown the vape pen on the ground and smashed it. Picard shouldn't have clapped. Thank you, Katie. That's exactly where I'm coming from. Why is everybody allowing this woman in front of them to just make a complete ass of herself with the boss? I mean, it's one thing when you show up hungover, right, to work.
Right.
That's like one stage of it, right? There's one stage where you show up hungover to work. The other stage is you actually show up drunk to work. The last stage is you drink at work. You understand that? You know, that's the way that this kind of stuff works. And you can also insert, drug addiction the same way. You know, one day you come in, you know, you're kind of hungover. Next day you come in wasted. And then the next thing you know, you're actually like shooting up at work. You know what I mean? Shooting up or smoking at work. So I thought that was treated really, really badly, really, really badly. And I can't say enough about how badly I think they treated that and how they did not treat that situation with the seriousness that it should have been treated, especially, again, with the actress saying, "This is why I'm doing this." You know what I mean? This is right. why I'm so into the part. And so I can right. be sort of an advocate. Yeah, you're not an advocate. I'm sorry. That was TV BS. And it was not the way that things really work when it comes to addiction and all that kind of stuff. And you sent a terrible message. You sent a terrible message that you can still do your job drunk and high. That's a terrible message to send people. It's a terrible message to send people. Oh, thank you. So Clyde said, great, looking forward to your stuff. I am too. I'm anxious to see how it turns out. So when you're involved in a producing role, you have to let a lot of other people do things, and you kind of just have to let them do it, because, you know, my role is mostly as a producer. So my role is mostly in putting the pieces together and then letting other people work, you know, and trying to get funding and things like that. So I'm looking forward to it too, Clyde. I'm hoping that it goes well. That's kind of where I was there. And so did you have any feelings on that scene, Dave? I'm just curious. Did it upset you at all? Like it upset me, or did you just kind of gloss over it?
It did bother me. It did bother me quite a bit. I don't understand why everyone was just kind of okay with it. I mean, I guess because it's not a Federation starship, they're kind of like, well, whatever. I don't know. I did think it was weird. I was going to try, in all honesty, I was going to try and focus on the more positive aspects of the show and the things that I really enjoyed, because I feel like that the show has a tendency to do some things that bother me. Displayed with the last episode, the tendency is to do, I guess they're in such a hurry to do things that normally you would not be allowed to do on quote unquote Star Trek, that they're kind of in a hurry to just stick it all in our face. So I thought it was unfortunate that they felt like they had to do that. I did, but like I said, there was other things about the show that I did enjoy. But this scene did bother me. And I was going to mention, Clyde Neville actually works with the Prescott Valley Performing Arts, and he actually does a lot of stuff actually with live stage theatrical production. So
that's awesome. Clyde
is also a creative professional himself. We've got a lot of amazing creative professionals coming in into the chat. It's one of the fun things about the show. The scene did quite bother me. But I was going to try and focus on more of the things I enjoyed.
One thing I can say is I'm probably going to end this review on a positive note. I can finally say that, which is not always easy to say in Picard, but
right.
But I did want to get that house cleaning out of the way again, especially because the actress has gone on record as saying this is important to her, and this is like why she likes the role, and I'm just like, you're really missing it right now. Katie had another comment. She said, "I'm currently watching The Offspring." On hashtag All Star Trek, which is that's how I've first kind of started interacting with Katie, was from the hashtag All Star Trek. And this Picard is not the same. As a fan, it makes me unhappy in many aspects. Also, regarding sweaters. The time, Sisko, you betrayed your uniform. So. good stuff. And I will put out a little shout out again to hashtag All Star Trek. That's a community online of people that will watch five episodes of Star Trek straight from the original series to Enterprise. Sometimes you can come in at any point. It's from Heroes and Icons, which is a digital sub channel that you can get through cable or through an antenna, depending on where you live. And a lot of people, what they even do is they'll just find out what the schedule is, and they'll just be watching like on Netflix or CBS All Access, and they just follow along with the chat. And it's a fun way to, especially if you've seen a lot of these episodes a lot of times, it's a fun way to interact and kind of see it in a new way, because you have all these other fans coming in with their little ideas and inputs and, oh, well, that scene was silly, or this is the history of that scene. It's a fun hashtag. It's usually very positive too, I would say, which sometimes you don't have, unfortunately, right now in Star Trek fandom. Sometimes people can get downright mean and personal, And here on this show, we try to never make it personal. We're talking about the show. We're talking about the actors. We're talking about the quality, that kind of stuff. We're not trying to insult anybody or dismiss anybody else's view. If you really like the show, we encourage you to chime in, and we would love to respond and talk to you and all that kind of stuff. And it's not like we're totally one way or the other where we hate the show. I think actually when we end this, by the time we end this review, we're probably going to be in a fairly good place, I think. But I'll always encourage you guys to come on and chat. Speaking of which, we actually have two additional guests that are ready to come on the show.
Awesome. Very cool.
Looks like we've got Ed Harris. And we also got PJ from Orville Nation. Let me get the banner down so we can see everybody.
Hey, guys.
Very cool. Hey.
Hey, PJ.
He's got a nice wall. That's nice.
Yeah. Hey, Ed. How's it going?
Not too bad.
Very cool.
I've got a face for radio, so you're going to see a nice little silhouette there of that.
Right. No, it's all good. It's all good. Very cool. Awesome. Well, this is really cool. I just want to say real quick, again, thank you to everyone who is commenting and basically in the live chat. Again, this will be the card that we'll be doing. This is the sketch card. This is original art. This is not a print. This is an artist proof. This is from Cartoon Classics. This is original art by me. So we're going to be doing a drawing towards the end of the show, and someone will win this original art sketch card. A lot of packages went out into the mail already. Some people have already received them. Mike Lombard was our big winner on the for signing up for the email newsletter, and that's in the mail to him. So enough about that. It's enough house cleaning. Let's get on with it. So awesome. So do you want to drive this crazy train here, Eric? Or oh, we can't hear you. Can anyone hear me?
I muted my mic. Sorry about that. I was letting you talk. I didn't cause any interference. I got to get better at that. So. PJ, I assumed you saw the episode. Do you have any like general impressions as we're getting in the deep dive, but do you have any general impressions?
I did. Let me just say, nice to meet Ed, and which we just lost. And Dave, it's such a pleasure. I've been wanting to connect with Eric, but I've never been coincided with you. So it's a pleasure, Dave.
Oh, well, thank you. It's great to talk to you. Of course, I've interacted on your live stream shows over on Orville Nation. I got smacked down because someone hated my Space 1999 resolution.
You're never going to live that down, are you, man? You're just never going to live that down.
I am never letting that go. Anyone who knows me knows that I never let something go. So that's what I'm known for. That I don't know. It's not a good thing, but it's true. But no, I quite enjoyed when I get the chance to actually come on Orville Nation and chat with everyone during the live stream shows. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
And we do have Ed back. Did you get a chance to actually see the episode, Star Trek Picard, episode 6, The Impossible Box?
I did. It was one of the best episodes I've ever watched.
There you go. Okay.
I did that purposely just to be contrary. It didn't work out for me.
You got to commit to it. If you're going to be contrary, you got to commit. You know,
I'm committed to contrarily being contrary. I think that, you know, I try to not look at any commercials or I just look at it holistically as I'm watching it. I understand like there are lots of flaws, and I find lots of issues with this season, just like how it's so disjointed, the scene jumping, like arbitrary plot lines that just seem to appear out of nowhere. And then there's some obvious stuff. It just seems so, it doesn't seem to flow very well, but
yeah. Yeah, I'd say that's a standard problem in the show. We were talking earlier before you came on. One of the issues that I've had is it's very uneven. There are times when you feel like things are going too fast, and then there's other times where it's dragging. You know what I mean? Where it's like this. You don't need to go into that much depth and explanation into this because this is pretty straightforward. This is pretty straightforward stuff, you know. And then there's other times where just like, wait, what's going on? You know. So I think that's one of the problems of the show is it does get uneven sometimes.
I completely agree. The profanity throws me off, that and Discovery.
Oh, like, totally. It takes me out of the world.
Yeah.
That's not Star Trek to me anymore. Now I feel like I'm, you know, like I'm just, you know, down the street at the supermarket or something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's something I want to be able to watch with my kids, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, Phil, Flor, and Filth, to quote, you know, 70s Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
But
on Red Skirts, we like to use the term flarket, which I thought was hysterical because I just recently returned to Twitter, and apparently someone is using the term flarket for some kind of app service or something. And I'm like, are you kidding me? We made that up for Red Skirts. And someone is literally using flarket.
It's
name their app. Like fire.
It's a regular Katniss.
Cool. So PJ,
did you didn't really tell us, so your what are your kind of initial impressions of the episode?
So I've been progressively being turned off by the show. My personal opinion. So this is the only episode I've only watched once, because I kind of wanted to disconnect. However, I will say this. I feel like we all know that at episode six is kind of where Siobhan was given the reins of the show.
Okay.
And I do feel there's something different about this episode a little bit. So I'm curious to see where seven, eight, nine, and 10 go. I thought it was okay. For me, there were less things wrong with it than other episodes. It was all right. There was a few moments which I do feel were very Star Trek. I do feel like when Hugh was showing Picard the Borgs that were being reclaimed, it felt Star Trek for a while there. So there were moments.
That was a real Trek moment. That was actually a real legit like Trek moment. That's very Trek. What Hugh is doing, his mission or whatever, that was very, very Trek.
So let me just say that from the moment that Picard saw Hugh and they kind of connected and Hugh smiled and was happy to see Picard and Picard was happy to see him, and those Borg were trying to help Picard. They weren't trying to hurt him. And they all kind of share that scar, you know, that they all share a commonality. And from that moment on, I loved this episode. All that stuff where you saw what he was doing. Now, let me mention, okay? I sure as heck hope that we don't have to watch the super, whatever it is, Vash, whatever they're called, torture Hugh in the next episode.
I think that's almost a given. This is a preview, so I think that's almost a given.
That's where they're going to lose me big time.
Did you guys see the episode 7 leak from Japan?
No. I have not. I haven't seen the leak. I just saw the teaser, and then I saw the scene that from the Ready Room that Will Wheaton's show.
Is it true that Japan in Japan they showed episode 7 instead of episode 6? And some people have actually done a review on episode 7.
Really?
True? I haven't heard that.
That's the first time I've heard that. So I wasn't aware of that. Just wanted to get back to the chat real quick. Katie had another comment, and I think it was off of what, Ed, you were saying earlier. She says, I can't stand the profanity. If this was the first Trek series I watched, I would not be a fan. I could never imagine Janeway cursing. Hard pill to swallow as a fan who tries to remain optimistic. And I can tell you, because I follow Katie on Twitter, and Katie is like the most optimistic person in the universe. She always tries to say good things and nice things. And really tries to be like kind of a champion for Star Trek. And I know her favorite is Voyager. That's her favorite series. And she loves Janeway. She loves Seven of Nine. But yeah, you know, Katie, I agree with you. If this was the first Star Trek that I was watching, I would be completely turned off. I would just be like, this is just like everything else. You know, I wouldn't necessarily see what was really distinctive about it. And she goes on to say, the Hugh hugging Picard was actually a moment started by Jonathan Del Arco, who is the actor who portrays Hugh, says he wanted the greeting to be joyous and a hug. Leave it to the actors to know their characters. And this is true. I saw Jonathan Del Arco posted this. He said he came up with the idea for the hug. It was not in the script. And that should tell you something. She's absolutely correct, because he tweeted that. He said it was my idea to do the hug. That was not on the script. And this is the first time we see anybody being nice to Picard, you know, when they first meet him. Nobody has been nice to Picard. They always keep telling him that he's a jerk. He screwed everything up. Even when he didn't really screw everything up, that they're mad at him for reasons that don't make any sense just to be mad at him. But yeah, this was a good moment. This was a good moment. And kudos to Jonathan Del Arco, the actor, for understanding this, for getting it, for being a fan, for actually like, you know, being into this. Because I saw him talk at Star Trek Vegas last year, and he's into it. You know what I mean? And he gets it. And it's a good contribution, and good on him for doing that, for making that decision. Absolutely. That the writers didn't. The writers did not make that decision.
That was the moment where I smiled and I was just thinking, oh, thank God.
Hey, Katie's seen it. She said she saw the leaked episode, but no spoilers. Man. She's not going to be talking about it. She said she saw it.
Well, the one saving grace I have to say is because they're on a Borg cube, and Hugh is part of the Borg reclamation, whatever they're calling it, project.
Yes.
If the Romulans decide to try to do something to him, I think Hugh does have some people that could probably come, hopefully, to save him. I'm hoping that we're not going to see a repeat of what happened with the last episode. I can't.
The Borg would help him, right? The former Borg would all help him.
Yeah, see, that's what that's what I'm hoping for. So,
but you know what? I would not put it past him to kill Hugh in the next episode. I would not put it past him that he will die a horrible death in the next episode.
All I could think of is with him interacting with everyone in the episode is how much I'd love for him to be a part of the crew moving forward. Like, you know, Hugh be a part of the crew and like how awesome that would be. I mean, that would be really interesting. And it would be fun too, because Picard would definitely have someone in his corner. I don't know. This episode to me.
This is the good part. This is the good part because Hugh was like doing the almost like the hero worship thing of Picard. He was treating him the way that fans treat Patrick Stewart. You know what I mean? Like he was like, hey, man, you know, only you would really get this. You know what we're doing here. You know what I mean?
Right,
because
you're
going to get it. You're going to understand this, what we're doing, trying to bring these former Borg, you know, back. So it really was. It's a high moment of the series, honestly, because we really haven't had anything like that in the series prior to this.
Yeah.
You know, this is it, you know, so, and it was a good moment. And I commend Jonathan Del Arco for what he did and his contribution to this, because, you know, I like it. I like his take on the character and the way that the character's matured and what he's doing, because he would understand and it makes sense because, you know, he was one of the first Borg to get his humanity back. So it makes a lot of sense. Also Bobby is saying hi. Bobby has been a pretty loyal viewer of the show. Bobby says, good evening to everyone. This episode was a step in the right direction. And I agree with you. And I think it's all because of Jonathan.
I think
it's Hugh. I like Hugh. He did a good job. And I like his contribution to Star Trek right now.
He's also the actor is also in good favor with CBS execs, which is a good thing. And that's why I don't think they're going to kill him off.
You know what would be neat if you can reach out to him, PJ, because, you know, I know PJ does a lot of shout outs. He does interviews. He did an interview with the actor who played Ichab with Manu. Be neat if you could ever get Jonathan to come on your show or get him to do a shout out and see if he's interested in being on the Orville. Because I know you always ask a lot of sci-fi alum, and he gets them to answer. Like he got Gates McFadden to do a shout out, and she talked about, well, I haven't been approached, but you know I'm interested. You know, because he always asks, like, hey, would you be on the Orville? So it's pretty cool. And if you ever have a chance to reach out to him, that would be neat to see what he says, if he would be interested in being in the Orville. Because I'm definitely on board with it right now, because I think he's a high point of the show right now for Picard. Probably the only real high point, honestly.
We'll work on it. And let me just say, Mr. Ed Harris, I love your work, and I thought your work in The Abyss was fantastic. So it's nice to meet you.
And I appreciate that. And I have a funny story to tell about that at some point in the future. It'll be funny for me.
So I'm going to mention Ed is actually on the show tonight. He's going to be a contributing writer actually for our upcoming digital magazine, and he's actually on the show tonight to actually talk about one of the number one story we're going to hit in our pop culture news segment tonight.
And PJ, PJ is going to contribute. He's going to be our first featured content creator. We're going to be doing an interview with him in the e-zine. PJ has agreed to do that. So we're going to be doing an interview with PJ about Orville Nation, about his YouTube channel and, you know, what he's trying to accomplish and all that good stuff. He's going to be our first content creator, featured content creator. So for streaming and all that stuff. So we're looking forward to that with the e-zine. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And we're looking to have that out at the end of March, right? End of March is when
That's going to be the goal. Everyone's kind of getting everything kind of together. I've contacted everyone who's going to be working on this first issue. Everyone's pretty much in place. So we're at the point now where people are getting their ideas together, figuring out how they're going to structure their stories, and, you know, kind of pulling it together. And then I'll be, you know, coordinating, doing a lot of layout. I'll be contributing some stuff, obviously, as well. To the publication too. So we should probably wrap up the review for Picard and we can get into all this other stuff.
we have another comment from Katie. She said he was the best part of that episode. 100% agree with you, Katie. 100% agree. He is a genuine character, not forced like the others. I agree with you. These legacy characters, quote unquote, were probably brought on to bring in fans because the new characters wouldn't. That's exactly how I feel, Katie. I mean, that's exactly how I feel. And one of the concerns I have is that we do know that Jonathan Frakes and Marina Sirtis are going to be in the next episode. That's apparently where Picard has gone, is to whatever colony that they're on, which I thought is kind of weird too. Why aren't they on Earth? But whatever, maybe we'll find out. But my real concern is this is going to be a kind of a throwaway cameo, that they are not going to be really relevant to the story in any way or anything like that. I do know from Jeri Ryan's interview on the Ready Room that she is coming back. She said she is going to come back this season. So she didn't die. There was some fan speculation that she died because, you know, she was in that situation with the guards are kind of closing in on her. And she was just literally in the middle of a room shooting with no cover or anything like that, which some people made a little fun of. But apparently she is coming back. She mentioned that in the Ready Room. Also in the Ready Room, Rod Roddenberry was in the Ready Room with Will Wheaton. Did any of you guys see this? Any of you guys watch the Ready Room?
I missed that one.
It was fascinating because I've wondered what Rod's involvement is as an executive producer of this show. And I'll be honest, the interview was a little difficult for me to watch because Will Wheaton was talking all about the legacy of Star Trek, the legacy of Gene Roddenberry, and what makes Trek, Trek. And quite frankly, what he said was the same thing that I think most of us say, which is that it's about that optimistic view of the future. And that's really the core principle of Star Trek. And I kept feeling like, are one of you going to address the fact that Star Trek Picard is not that? You know what I mean? That it's not doing that. And how does that conversation go? And there was a little moment where Rod talked about sort of his involvement and the fact that basically they give him notes, they send him ideas, and then he makes comments about them. And his job essentially is to sort of look at that legacy. That's the way he kind of explained it, to look at that legacy and give comments like, well, that's, you know, that's not very Trek, you know, that kind of a thing. And he kind of alluded to the fact that he did have some issues with, and it was very subtle, but he kind of alluded to the fact that he does have some issues with the way the characters interact with each other and that they're not very, you know, not very Trek. And you can just kind of barely feel it, you know, in what he's saying. And it's very telling. It kind of reminded me of the first interview with Siobhan, where Siobhan kind of just dropped out there that, you know what? They threw my draft away. My original pitch was thrown in the trash, even though that was the pitch that got Patrick Stewart on the show. So I do encourage you guys to watch the Ready Room with Will Wheaton, because sometimes they say things and you can kind of sense the double meaning of what they're saying. And it feels like they're letting something slip that maybe they really aren't supposed to, you know? And it is interesting to watch. And Jeri Ryan was also on that episode as well. And
there's definitely reading between the lines when you're watching them sometimes. Yeah,
absolutely. There's body language. You can tell when somebody's feeling like a little uncomfortable with the question, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. But I have to say I actually kind of felt bad for Rod, because I felt like Will Wheaton was not kind of, you know, recognizing the elephant in the room, that Picard really isn't those things. You know what I mean? That they, and they were talking about all the kinds of things that all we fans talk about. And it was just like, that's not really in Picard, though, you know? And
can I add, when you're finished, I want to, yeah, can I add something, Eric? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We do have a couple more comments in the chat here. Clyde mentioned, says, I think your Facebook location will be a big win for your blog. But who exactly is that directed to? Is that is our Facebook location?
That,
or
I think that might be directed towards me, just talking about that the Facebook page will be a big win overall for what we're doing. So, and I'd have to say I agree. The Facebook page for the show is where we get our most interaction. I think we get our most views. Over time, the views actually accumulate. And for example, like the big growth area, I think right now for us is actually ironically enough, the audio show again.
Right.
Since we switched over to the
Anchor.
Thank you. Since Anchor, we switched over, which I should remember that they're a sponsor. Since we switched over to Anchor, we've had a lot more. I noticed the show growing by leaps and bounds. The stats are way up from where they were before. We have lots of new people finding us. These are all good things. So yes, definitely right now the Facebook is the hub for what we're doing here with the Retro Rogues, but I don't think that's going to be the hub, you know, moving forward. I think obviously, you know, the website, the e-zine, the podcast, all these other things are going to continue to grow. And also number two, the most important thing that's a big win for the show is all these wonderful people in here right now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That PJ's on here, the fact that Ed is on here, the wonderful commenters and the people who support and watch the show, like Katie and Bobby, you know, that's the real win. The community that's slowly being built, that's the big win. That's what's important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Katie did say that Rod Roddenberry gave her hope. She said, Rod Roddenberry gave me hope. I just hope that I hope he's just not ignored all the time. That's the concern that I have is how much do they weigh his comments and things like that when he says, you know, the way these characters are interacting is not very Trek. You know what I mean? So, you know, I don't know how much they take what he says into consideration. She also said, taking a moment to comment how happy I was that I finally the word Janeway was mentioned when Jerry was interviewed. Again, leave it to the actors to know the history of their character, not the writers. And yeah, that's in reference to the Ready Room interview that Jerry Ryan did. She did specifically mention Janeway and the relationship that Seven and Janeway had. And she was talking about that in terms of trying to bring the character back and all that kind of stuff. And you would wish that would be like a line of dialogue somewhere in this, you know what I mean? Like some mention of Janeway. But honestly, it feels to me like Seven did not learn any of the lessons that Janeway taught her. You know, she's kind of gone on a very dark path, and she's not really encouraging, you know, the angels of her nature right now. She's in a very dark place. She's basically on a blood feud of vendetta, that kind of thing. And that's not exactly very Trek. It's certainly not the kind of things that Janeway was trying to impart to Seven. I don't think I never took it that way.
Right. And I was just going to mention, if I could, to talk to Katie directly. The last episode, I talked about how shocked I was that when, you know, Icheb was going through what he was going through in the episode, I was shocked that the fact that the Starfleet didn't have a rescue operation looking for him, essentially. And when the rescue operation showed up, that it was just Seven by herself. I mean, I would have liked to have seen Janeway in that moment, you know, with some other Federation security officers. You know, Seven can still be part of the Fenris Rangers, but if she needed help or if Janeway knew that this was going on, I just, in that moment, I felt like the two of them should have been there together, you know, looking for Icheb. I just feel like that for Trek history and for those of us who've watched all the shows and who love all the shows and love all these characters, I felt like it was a huge misstep not to have Janeway there with Seven. And you know, and then you don't have to show us that maybe Janeway isn't on the same page as Seven thinking that the Fenris Ranger's base is vigilantes is something that she can't support, that can always be a line of dialogue later on that, that explains why they're still not, you know, they're not tight, you know, currently. I don't know. I thought that was a huge misstep in that episode. But then again, I had problems with that whole opening sequence anyway. I didn't like having to see that. And I felt like that Starfleet would be looking for him. I just couldn't imagine he'd just be out there by himself going through that.
So, well, the really sad part, too, is in a way it kind of reflects badly on Janeway, Chakotay, the entire Voyager crew, really. It's like, well, where the hell were they when all this was going on? You know what I mean? Why aren't they helping out? I mean, Icheb was a member of the crew. He was the one that actually joined Starfleet. He was a Starfleet cadet while the show was still going. They were basically doing, you know, an online course for him, you know? And he actually joined Starfleet. They kill him in a Starfleet uniform, which, by the way, doesn't really make any sense because he was on leave. That's the kind of stuff where it's like, you're violating your own continuity right now. You said he was on leave. Why the hell is he in a Starfleet uniform when he's on leave helping the Fenris Rangers? That kind of stuff is just like, how did that get past everybody? But it's like, you can tell what they're doing is it's little TV tricks because they're like, well, we want to establish that it's Icheb. We want to establish that he was a Starfleet officer. So let's put him in the uniform, even though he's on leave. That's cool, right? Yeah. You know, nobody's going to notice that. I did. You know what I mean? And it takes me out of the world again where I'm like, come on, that's a silly like TV thing. You guys aren't even following your own rules right now. So I think we all agree that the whole Icheb thing is terrible. What they did to Icheb is just awful, you know?
If you look at the comments, I think Ronnie's comment kind of sums it up.
Despair and disappointment means Picard is being discussed. Oh, Ronnie. I think you've unfortunately hit the nail right on the head.
you guys know, have you heard as well that Manu, the actor who plays Icheb, has also been blacklisted from the conventions now?
Really? Yeah, I saw that on your interview.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, there's a whole story there. And I do recommend people check out Orville Nation's interview with Manu, because they get into a lot of depth. He discusses some of the, I don't know if you would call it the feud or whatever that he was going on. A lot of it came down to a tweet that he did. And a lot of people just will not forgive him for this tweet, even though the person the tweet was directed at, which was Anthony Rapp, has forgiven him, which just really shows you how fandom gets completely insane. But yeah, it's an unfortunate thing. And I will say, you know, justice for Icheb, you know what I mean? Because for me, that wasn't Icheb because, hey, Manu wasn't playing him. So that really wasn't Icheb as far as I'm concerned. I'll make that argument, you know? Katie mentions, I will say if this show makes it that Janeway and Seven had a falling out, I will be done. The Janeway Seven relationship was the one thing I loved in Voyager. If it is destroyed, I will be broken. And I totally understand this, Katie, because this is her favorite Star Trek. I know that from Katie's posts and stuff like that. Star Trek Voyager is her favorite. So I can totally understand that and relate to that. You know, it's, I don't know. In some ways, I think it's good they're not mentioning Janeway, because I feel like if they did mention Janeway, it's only going to be bad. You know, it's going to be like, oh, well, she just left her. You know what I mean? And you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's not going to be necessarily a good thing if they did bring Janeway back, even in dialogue. It's going to like somehow reflect badly on her and her legacy. It says, I'm already heartbroken over the C7 issue. Eric, you probably know I'm a C7er. It breaks my heart to see the darkness of Seven. She didn't deserve it. She would have thrived on Earth. And I think a lot of fans feel like Seven, like I said earlier, Seven's in a really dark place. And I don't think that's what fans were hoping for her. They were hoping that Seven was going to be in a really good place by now. And I think a lot of fans are really upset at the fact that she's obviously in a very bad, broken kind of place right now. She also goes on, the writer should have made it that Seven's knowledge was used by Starfleet to fight the Borg. They would have treated her like she was gold, her knowledge and intelligence. Ambassador to the Borg. That's an interesting idea. I think that's an interesting idea if they had gone down that route.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I guess that's my biggest surprise is, and a bit of a shock, is just how all alone Seven is. You know, because even though we mentioned it before, I know, Eric, you keep calling out the Lone Ranger idea, but it's just kind of, to me, it seems sad and unfortunate that even though they're called the Fenris Rangers, so far it's just a Fenris Ranger of one. She's in a solitary ship by herself. She's trying to save Icha by herself. When she's trying to help out Picard's motley crew on board that ship, which I don't think has a name, they're, you know, she's basically by herself. I just feel like that's unfortunate.
The ship Rangers is called La Serena.
Go ahead, PJ. Sorry.
I was just going to say that the ship is called La Serena.
Oh, okay.
La Sirena, the mermaid in Spanish.
Oh, okay. Cool.
If I could just add one thing to what Eric was saying before, I just want to, it's interesting that all the actors or a lot of the Star Trek actors are walking this very fine line because they're all eager to work. They would love to be on the show, but they don't, at the same time, they don't want to critique. They don't want to critique anything that they see wrong because they want to be on the show. They want to be back in the Star Trek universe.
No, oh yeah. No. Well, I don't ever fault the actors for wanting to work. And there are segments of the fandom that will confuse the character with the actor. You should never do that. Actually, Manu had a good take on that. And he's very open in saying, I'm not Icheb. I'm not as good as he is. You know what I mean? But he appreciates the fact that, you know, Icheb is different than him personally. That's what actors do. They act and they want to work. I understand that. And the fandom has to understand that even when they're disappointed and an actor makes a questionable decision or they feel like they quote unquote ruin the legacy of the character. You know, we last week we had, or was it last week or the week before, we did the quote from Harrison Ford where somebody went up and asked him, you know, hey, were you a Force ghost in the last Star Wars? His response was, I don't know what the fuck a Force ghost is. You know, he's not a fan. He's an actor. You know what I mean? He's playing a character. So a lot of actors, that's their attitude, and they shouldn't be faulted for that. It's a job. They're not necessarily fans. You know, that's very common, especially in the sci-fi genre, unfortunately, and in Trek. Most Trek actors are not fans. They're not, okay? And people have to realize that. So there is a disconnect there. You know, Ronnie kind of mentioned, I think, along these lines, says that's true. He says you don't want your favorite character making a cameo in this. That hopefully this is all a game by Q, but that would require intelligent writing. You know, Ronnie, that's kind of what I was alluding to, is that, yeah, at this point, I feel like you almost don't want your favorite character in this. I did like Data. I did like the way they brought back Data. In fact, that to me is the high point of the series, is the very first scene with Data and Picard. I like that. I like Brent Spiner a lot. I like that he was in it. I like that he came back as Data. But I do think in a lot of ways, some of these legacies of the characters are being trampled on. They're being trampled on. And they're not in the places that we would have wanted them to be, the places that we hope them to be as fans, as people that watch these shows, that still watch these shows. It's a little shocking. And I think we're coming up like on the hour mark for this review, but so I'll let Katie have this last word, unless anybody else on the panel wants to, you know, chime in. But said, where the heck is Janeway, Chakotay, the Doctor, Paris, Alana? Now, if the Voyager crew is the Fenris or Janeway is the head, I'll be hooked. I doubt it, though. Seven shouldn't be alone. I don't think Janeway would be the head of the Fenris Rangers. Just, I don't think it would fit her MO. You know, the last we saw her was a Nemesis and she was an Admiral. Now, would she still be an Admiral now? I don't know. I don't know what they would do. Apparently Riker's not, that's going to be disappointing to me. It looks like Riker's not even in Starfleet anymore. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of goes back to what Ronnie was saying. And I don't know if you really want your favorite characters in this, because I don't think it's going to be good. You know, Ronnie says, it says it was all downhill from the first scene. I thought it was a beautiful one. I'm glad they didn't mess up the Data cameo at least. And, I agree. I thought it was a beautiful scene. As a fan, I really love that scene. I have an emotional attachment to that scene.
I have one question for you guys. Does anybody think Laura is involved in this story?
Well, let me chime in, because Eric has been putting forth that theory. And but he also says that he feels like, and I'm speaking for you, Eric, I apologize, but he also has stated that he feels like that there's a possibility that that's not really going to be anything they do in this show. However, I hope that Laura is a part of the show. I would like for Laura to basically be somehow kind of behind a lot of what we're seeing, and that it's not just Maddox off by himself, but it's Maddox in league with Laura. And maybe that way, Eric put forth the idea that maybe they use this similar kind of technology that they use to create Dodge and Soji, and maybe Lore has a more human persona. He's able to age. And then that way, Brent Spiner could just come on and basically be Lore again, but they don't have to worry about doing the makeup and the contacts and the whole thing. And it kind of gives him an in and a way to be on the show, and maybe even be, if not the big bad, you know, one of the major players in the background kind of pulling the strings with a lot of what's happening.
Yeah. And as I've said, I think that would be so cool if they did that, but I don't think that's actually going to happen. I just think it would be cool if they did that. I think it would be a really neat twist if Soji and Dodge were the daughters of Lore and not the daughters of Data. It would make a lot more sense, because you assume that Maddox had access to Lore, that Lore was put in a box somewhere like B4. But I'm not really holding out hope of that theory being correct. And Ronnie did ask, because I think he's going off that comment that I made. He says, wait, hold up. Riker is non-admiral. I haven't watched episode 3. Ronnie, I'm going by the scenes that we've seen from the preview, because there was a preview at the end of the episode. And clearly Riker is in civilian attire. Troy is in civilian attire. We know from the end of this episode of The Impossible Box that it appears that Picard is going to some colony, and we can pretty much assume that colony is where Riker and Troy are at. That's why Picard is going there, to seek some sort of sanctuary with them. I will say one thing that I'm a little disappointed about is I was kind of happy to finally see kind of everybody together, as far, because, you know, most of Picard is basically two tracks. You have the Soji, the Soji track and the Picard track. So you have what Picard is doing, and then you have what's going on with Soji and the Romulan. And finally to see them together, you know, I'm like, okay, now the story is really moving. Now we can really go forward with this story, and it can start to get interesting. It kind of disappointed me that they're separating again. So, like, yeah, Picard is with Soji, but the crew got left behind. So the crew still has to deal with whatever they're going to deal with, the repercussions. You know, we had the scene with Elnor. You know, Elnor is sitting there with Hugh.
Right.
I was kind of like, why didn't Elnor and Hugh just go through the portal with Soji and Picard? I don't understand that. What's the point? I mean, Hugh has definitely been found out. I mean, the guards are coming, so everybody knows what Hugh did. We can see in the preview that they're interrogating him. So I didn't quite understand that, why Elnor and Hugh didn't just go through the portal with Soji and Picard. That I thought was weird.
I gotta say, it bothers me a little bit, the whole thing about Elnor at the very end. His you know, he's confronting guys, his security team, with lasers, with his sword. You know, I don't know. I think it's just one of those things that the people have. People in production and writing have not, like, thought through.
Yeah, the sword thing, we talked about the sword thing before, and I am a big non-fan of the sword thing, because, you know, swords are very conspicuous, okay? And the second you walk in any place in a sword, if you walk into a bar with a sword in modern times, okay, you attract a lot of attention, and they're going to call the police, okay? That's exactly what would be happening in the future as well. Whether they have police or not, they're going to call some authority. They're going to be on guard. Anybody with a gun, anybody with a disruptor or a phaser is going to be ready to use that. And it's funny, because even in the show, when we first saw Elnor use his weapon and he chopped off the former Romulan senator's head, the next guy was like, oh, well, screw this. I'm just going to shoot you. And he started reaching for his disruptor, and that's when they got beamed up. But even in the show, they kind of made fun of it. you know, I say it was like very close to being an Indiana Jones moment. And now it appears like Elnor's making this big stand with multiple Romulan security responding and Tal Shiar, we assume. And he's going to, what, come out just smelling roses and he killed everybody. And I don't know. I don't understand it. I think it's it pushes the that suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, the Indiana Jones moment just comes to mind. I can just see that gif of Indiana Jones.
Yeah. Cool.
Do we have any other thoughts on this last episode of Picard?
I was just going to say overall that, like I said, from the introduction of Hugh on, I like the episode. I'm hoping that we don't have to watch Hugh get tortured in the next episode, and that, you know, we continue on this forward trajectory, because I did enjoy the second half of the episode quite a bit. From the introduction of Hugh on, I was having a lot of fun and really enjoying what they were showing us. And it was really refreshing, because the way Hugh was being with Picard and touring him through the Borg cube, and we were learning more about it. It was very interesting. It felt very Trek. And so overall, I'd say, like I said, this is one of the better episodes. And I'm hoping that the next episode will hopefully continue that trend. That's my last bit I've got to say about this episode 6. Was it The Impossible Box?
Yeah, I think we're pretty much in agreement that Hugh is the highlight, and Hugh kind of makes the episode. I think he makes the episode. So
yeah, is that good? Are we ready to move on? Or
yeah, I think so. Ahead. We can move on to pop culture. And by the way, PJ, I know you kind of came on impromptu, so if you have to duck out, we understand or anything like that. But we were going to do some pop culture news.
Yeah, actually, I just wanted to say I have to jump off, but I want to say thanks again, Dave. It was so nice to meet you.
Nice
I hope
too.
You guys can come on the Orville Nation for an interview, and so I will be in touch. Ed, it was very nice to meet you. My pleasure.
You too, PJ.
So I'll let you guys continue. Thank you so much, Eric. Thanks for the invite, cool. Guys. Good night.
Oh, thanks for being on. We've talked about it quite a bit, and it's nice that you actually made it on. Because I've been on PJ's channel, but he hasn't had a chance to come on ours yet. So that's awesome. And then don't forget, he's going to be our first featured content creator in our e-zine. So we definitely want to push that.
That's an honor. Yeah, okay, I'll let you guys continue. Thanks so much. Bye.
Thanks, cool. PJ.
Thank you.
I cannot say enough good things about Orville Nation. And I really feel like PJ is a leader, sort of like in the YouTube streaming community, because he has all sorts of people as guests. I mean, people that don't even really have a whole lot of content. He's had them come on the show and they can give their opinions and theories. I got a real wild theory from one of his subscribers about Picard early on that I thought was just really interesting. And I was kind of like, well, that's a good theory, but I don't think the writers are good enough to come up with your idea, you know? So, but it's fun. And it's a real community. Orville Nation has like a real community. They love anything sci-fi. Most Orville fans, I would say, are also Star Trek fans. Not all. I have actually interacted with some Orville fans that never watched Star Trek, which I think is interesting. But there's a lot of cross-pollination there.
Also on this episode, during the pop culture news segment, the Retro Rogues and Ed Harris discuss an important piece of original comic book art getting ready to go to the auction block.
We're going to start off, actually, I want to introduce our guest. Ed Harris is here. He's graciously agreed to contribute to the digital magazine we're going to be putting out later in the year. Ed is going to be our original comic book art collecting expert. Ed owns an amazing collection of original comic book art, very knowledgeable in terms of the original art scene. I have a few pieces in my collection, obviously, as a professional comic book artist. I'm a little versed in it. I always enjoy my conversations and discussions with Ed when it comes to comic art collecting. And so if you're interested in getting into collecting original comic book art, or it's something that you're curious about, Ed's going to be contributing to the magazine and kind of helping to kind of point you in a direction and help illuminate all of us with this really, truly fascinating hobby. It's an interesting way to get into collecting art in general. And I highly, highly recommend it, especially if you can find a piece that connects with you, that's important for you personally, you know, a favorite story that you've liked or a character that you love. It's always kind of fun to have a piece of original art that connects you even further with that thing that you love. So thank you, Ed, for being here on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Very cool. We're going to go ahead and get right into this news item here real quick. So this is interesting. This broke a couple of days ago, and I thought it'd be really, really interesting to have Ed on the show to talk about it. So what we have here is this comes from justcollecting.com. And what it says is the first ever Flash Gordon comic strip is set to auction at Profiles in History. They've got an image here of the page. It says the first ever Flash Gordon comic strip was drawn by Alex Raymond in 1933, and it is heading to auction, having been rediscovered more than 80 years, I'm going to add later. Raymond's original artwork for Flash Gordon number one has been described as the greatest find in comic art history and could sell for more than $500,000 at Profiles in History next month. This vintage pencil and ink illustration signed by Alexander Raymond beside number one in the lower left panel and is also marked Flash Gordon page one by Alexander Raymond in the top margin. So Flash Gordon remains one of the most famous and influential works in science fiction history and inspired generations of artists and writers, including George Lucas, who of course created Star Wars, and Gene Roddenberry, who created Star Trek. So this is a very, very important piece of comic book history, art history, pop culture history. I was describing today that you have to think of Flash Gordon as the tributary from which, you know, Star Wars and Star Trek and all these other things, they flow from Flash Gordon. So we've done quite a bit of coverage of Flash Gordon, actually, in the Studio Retro Retrospective show, reviewing both the original Filmation animated film as well as the Filmation animated series, both of which were enjoyable high points. The animated film possibly being one of the best of its kind, in my humble opinion. So tell me, Ed, had you heard about the fact that they were going to be auctioning basically the first ever Flash Gordon comic strip?
Honestly, I've had my nose buried in work for the last month or two, so I'm a little behind on what's going on in the comic art scene. But I did see the article, and I did read up on it at a couple different locations. I've actually got a relatively decent full-res scan of it that I've looked at. It's very interesting, just to say the least, just the panel transitions and stereotypes that are thrown in there for the time. It's a great piece. I'm surprised it's in such good condition, to be honest.
It's interesting too, because I scanned this article, but I didn't delve too deeply into it. But at one time I had actually heard some rumor that when Al Williamson took over drawing the Flash Gordon comic strip, that King Features basically gave him a bunch of Alex Raymond original art that basically they felt like they had no use for. And a lot of actually original Flash Gordon art at one time was actually in Al Williamson's collection. And I've heard that rumor from a couple different people over the years, but I've never had it substantiated that it was actually true. But this is an amazing find. So tell me, as an original comic art collector, do you think that the estimate that they're giving sounds about right? Do you think it could maybe go for $500,000? I mean, I see the significance and the importance of it, but to me, that seems like it might be a little high, or maybe I am misguided.
You know, I think it's all perspective. I mean, like that Fritz the Cat Crumb piece was $1.2 million, I think. There was a Frazetta that went for a ridiculous amount of money several months ago as well. I think there are some deep pockets in the collecting community, some very, very non-public purchasers. Like, I don't know anybody who's just laying around with $500,000 that can throw at this, but it is the first strip. It is in good condition. It's fully intact and it's signed. I think the only possible negative that might impact this is just, you know, stock market in general is down right now.
That's true.
Depending on, you know, how timid people are, but it might be a good opportunity for somebody to pick up something because other people will be timid in trying to purchase. I'm trying to think how I can explain this. I mean, Flash Gordon was originally geared towards like kind of a competing market with Buck Rogers.
Yeah. So
Buck Rogers had come out like maybe like, I want to say 5 or 6 years earlier. And it's definitely interesting. I mean, I think it went till 2003 or 2006. So it definitely had the longevity of a comic strip. You don't really see a lot of Buck Rogers. I mean, I grew up in the 80s watching, you know, like Gil Gerard and, you know, Miss Gray.
Yes.
bitty. Yeah. But I didn't have the historic exposure to like some of these comic strips. And I find now that I'm in my 40s, I'm a purposeful cough there. So I'm looking at older historic pieces. So like I read a lot of old Dick Tracy. I read a lot of Winsor McCay. I read a lot of just old strips, like all the old Superman strips, just like the cartoon stuff. It's just, it was a simpler time and it's not as complex when it comes to the visuals, but the visuals that are there are super, they're detailed. I mean, if you look at the, I think it's like the seventh panel there, second row down, the biplane.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just looking at that plane, it looks so much smaller than it probably is, but you've got like all that, you know, like the flash coming off there and then the line work. And then the panel right before that, where you can see where, you know, they're talking about how he's a Yale graduate and, you know, world champion polo player, just the ridiculous detail gets thrown into that. But I also want to know what airline that is, because those are some roomy seats.
Yes, that's true. The
last time I remember, I think you could have fit like 6 people in that space right there.
Right. That's true. It was a different time. It was definitely a different time. So we've got
longtime fan of mine and longtime fan of hers. Micah's on Facebook. Hi, Micah. I really think this is probably going to at least fetch $500,000. I'd be surprised if it doesn't. I mean, Crumb is one thing, Frazetta is one thing, but this is a very, very old piece of art. I mean, it's what, 86, 87 years old. So, I mean, it's something that you could proudly display on your wall because it's not offensive. It's a definitely periodic piece. Lots of great detail in the art and the story. Like, you know, it moves along pretty fast because they want it, back then they just wanted to capture your attention and get you moving right on. And like, you know, in the 1930s, you had Great Depression, and then you had people who were just like looking to just get out of their system, and like space and everything was such a prevalent concept.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting too, because actually looking at this piece, I can see I am influenced by a lot of the classic illustrators and comic book artists. I was just noting, because I mentioned earlier, people who comment, thank you for commenting, and you're being entered into a drawing to possibly win this original art sketch card. And what's interesting is I was looking at the backgrounds and how they're handled, and you can see I was doing something similar with the feathering and the kind of light effect actually in the background of this card. And I learned this kind of look, this kind of explosive effect from a lot of these classic comic strips. And you can actually see several examples in this Alex Raymond original. It's all right there. So
I also think that the perspectives are a lot different than you find in modern comics. A lot of modern comics are geared towards just, you know, big splash pages and like, you know, upfront, like kind of bombastic imagery. And here you've got a lot of subtlety. I mean, there's some action like in the bottom left panel, like where they're parachuting out and, well, not the bottom left, but the third row down. They're parachuting out, the plane's crashing. Above there, you've got the scientist who's got his giant telescope in the background with a light, and just, I mean, the detail alone is phenomenal for such of the time, because I feel like the angles are just so much more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could walk up on the scene where he's pulling the parachute.
Yeah.
You could actually, I think that's something you could actually see in real life. You could see, you know, the Arab in the middle of the desert next to his camel, which has got to be a really short camel.
Right.
I mean, I know he's on his knees, but either that's a really tall guy or a really short camel, because they're both on their knees.
Yeah.
It gives you the idea, like you can just see, I can feel like you could actually be there. And with the fact with, you've got the newspaper component, you've got the action component, you've got science, you've got the social commentary, the religious commentary, because the first two or three panels there, it's all encompassing. It's just, it pulls you in. Even like for me, if I read this maybe 10 years ago, I would have been like, this is pretty boring, but I understand the significance of it now because I've gone back and I've read the historic, you know, not historic, but I've read things in the past.
It's very interesting, and I thought it would be definitely something worth bringing up on the show. So tell me, Eric, how did you feel when I shared this news article with you about the very first Flash Gordon comic strip actually coming up for auction?
Well, it's pretty cool. It's definitely pretty cool. Obviously, this character has influenced so much science fiction. I have a little image here of one of the first screen adaptions of this particular work. See that there?
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
This is of course Captain Proton, which obviously was inspired by Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers from Star Trek Voyager. But my point is that the influence of the character looms large in all science fiction. And there's just no denying that. I'm also a fan of the, the 80s film quite a bit. So it's always been a something that I really enjoyed. So, but the historical significance of Flash Gordon to sci-fi can't be understated.
And there's a lot of artistic importance and influence, too, when you talk about the emergence of Alex Raymond. Alex Raymond's work on Flash Gordon and also I think it was Rip Kirby. There's still a lot of creative professionals that consider these, you know, high watershed, like important works still to this day. The storytelling alone in this one page is impressive. It is beyond just, you know, the character significance, the story significance in terms of its impact on science fiction. You have the emergence of one of the greatest comic artists who probably ever lived. And the artists who would come on later to work on Flash Gordon, you know, people like Al Williamson, which interesting enough, you know, Al Williamson took over, was doing Flash Gordon. He eventually ended up doing a lot of stuff with Star Wars. It's interesting how all these things kind of circle back, you know, even with the image from Voyager there from, you know, it's just terribly interesting. So the importance of this particular page cannot be understated. And for those of you that are watching, or possibly listening, now is the time to scour the internet and find high-res versions of this page and save them to your computer. There's a lot of interesting things to be learned from this page in terms of storytelling and technique and rendering, and there's a lot of really great high-res images of this page floating around the internet. So even if you can't afford $500,000, you can definitely afford a right-click and save it to your computer and have it in your library to reference when you're creating comic book art. So I think that's probably good for this segment, unless Ed, do you have anything else to add?
No, I'm very interested to see what happens at the end of this month. I wish there were a little bit of kind of pre-bidding so you can get some ideas of what's going to happen. Unfortunately, with Profiles in History, it doesn't quite work that way. So they do a lot of great auctions with a lot of high-end pieces. So I can only imagine their clientele is going to be chomping at the bit to get their hands on this.
Yeah, I would definitely say that's I could definitely see that. And I wouldn't be surprised if the person or organization or institution that buys this doesn't use that opportunity, you know, kind of as a kind of like a press publicity moment too. I wouldn't be surprised if someone doesn't use that as a, you know what I mean? Kind of like a publicity press kind of thing.
Right. Like if you're in some kind of like tech industry or some kind of aerodynamic industry, you know, owning this and having it in your company, I don't want to say lobby, but somewhere maybe in your president's office, it could really stoke the fuel of your constituents, like your employees and people who want to invest in your company. So it's not necessarily a bad investment, no matter what.
Yeah. Very cool.
Awesome. Speaking of which, if anybody wants to go in, say maybe 1/500th of this, with me, we can figure out a sharing schedule and we can try and bid on this sometime. So,
all right, I'm down for that. I can afford that.
I think I could live with having it for 1 week every 5 years.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and find the live show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.